America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the
R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Hi everybody, and welcome to the R-H-A-P-B-B-B-N-B for week number two of Big Brother 22. My name is Mike Bloom, here to, unlike Memphis, be nice and open with this panel about the second week of Big Brother All-Stars, as we see lots of tears shed. Sorry, just doing my best Julie Chen Moonves impression there. Lots of star power, both rising and falling or holding steady in the veto competition. There is a lot to talk about. Let's welcome in the panel for this week. First, the co-pilot here on the B&B, but certainly not in a Dirk Space Jammer way, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you?
I'm good. I'm thinking we should put out a buffet of crab legs, Mike. I think that's a really great way to just class up the place and help all of our guests just feel so much more comfortable.
We'll have like a day sale, where during the day you'll get crab legs half off, and it'll possibly come with some talk. But at the end we'll say, like, don't worry, there are safeguards in place, and then just sort of leave the message at that. But it's interesting you're pointing out crab legs, because our guest this week is someone who you can hear talk about food each and every week on the Beyond Top Chef recap here on Reality TV, where Hap Up's also featuring myself, as well as the expert on all things Bachelor, Bachelorette International, even here on Reality TV, where Hap Up's Haley Strong. Welcome to the B&B. How's it going?
I'm doing well. You know, it's just taking me a couple guys and a couple tries to get this podcasting thing right.
Oh, no.
I already got to get my thoughts on that, that whole interaction.
I'm going to be up front with you guys. I totally forgot until just now that, Mike, this is going to remind you of Eddie coming on the podcast. I forgot to watch Thursday's episode. I know what happens, but I just realized I forgot to watch it. I've watched the entire week so far. I know what's going on. I know what's going on in feeds, et cetera, but I just straight up forgot to watch it.
I mean, of any podcast to not watch the last episode for, I think that would, plus considering like the formalities that went through, including the HOH winner, I think it's okay. Honestly, what you missed is, listen, as I said, I'm going to be open. I'm going to come right out and say this. I think Julie Chen Moonves is the worst longtime reality TV host in the history of the medium. Like, I am flummoxed that week after week in this particular year, that there are so many weird, between screw-ups and non-sequiturs and just extremely awkward off-the-cuff remarks. And again, like, if it's TJ Lavin, I would not be surprised, right? Because it's like, you don't,
because he fell off a BMX bike.
Yeah, it's like, listen, you did not get into the industry as a host. You're not here for your charisma necessarily. But Julie Chen Moonves has not only been hosting this show for 20 years, but like has been a media personality for more. So I am just like, my mind feels like it's pouring out of me during every live show, because Julie Chen Moonves just continues to be this gigantic package pile of awkward, despite hosting the show, Liana, for going on 22 seasons.
What do you want, Mike? She's only been doing it for 20 years, okay? Like,
she's just kidding.
She's just kidding. Kidding.
You gotta remember the golden rule. Always be terrible at your job.
Yeah, I think that'll be the next one, the next phrase that she says. I think for me, what's even more baffling is the fact that this is, you know, obviously it's they have to air the live episodes, I use in air quotes because they're not actually live, close to when they are taped. But the fact that two words in, she's already making a mistake and nobody bothered to go back and be like, you know what, roll camera back. Like, let's just reshoot that real quick. Not a problem. 30 extra seconds never happened. I don't know if to put that on Julie or the production team or what's going on. But
what an excellent point. Like, why are they doing this? I do not care if this is airing live, like the show is airing live to me directly. Do not care. I would rather them like have the 15 extra minutes of footage and be able to like create like a normal product that like makes sense.
Are they trying to be like, look, we still have
the fun of live, but really it's just like,
so for example, you don't need to include Julie Chen Moonves saying that Danny Briones wishing her a happy birthday and saying that the previous week she looked like quote unquote very pretty actress Busy Phillips. Like, that's not needed if you have more stuff and you're able to trim it down a little bit. Just saying.
Make an hour and 15 or like have 60 minutes of footage and then you can cut out what you don't need.
I know, but it's like, that's what makes Big Brother Big Brother. I kind of feel like Julie Chen as a terrible host is a necessary component to make Big Brother what it is. Like, without her new catchphrases or sayings at the end of every episode, like, how would we have done the draft last week, Mike? You know, it brings me joy.
And I also don't understand that. Like, so we talked about how, you know, we talked about the draft last week. I think that in her interview with Dalton Ross, she was alluding to like the, you know, Golden Rule stuff was referring to Black Lives Matter. I do not know what veiled social message she was making this week with if you have to choose to be right or to be kind, please choose to be kind. Also, that phrase makes absolutely no sense. Mary pointed this out on the Thursday recap that like that's not the phrase, and also you shouldn't have to choose between being right or being kind.
Isn't the right thing to do the kind thing? Like, I don't even understand the phrase.
Yeah, maybe she screwed it up. Maybe it was wrong on the teleprompter, but I guess it's like, well, if you know you're right, pretend you're wrong and be gracious about it. Is that what she's implying?
Yeah, but like, okay, but when you say the right thing to do, it's not that she's talking about like factually being correct, right? I don't think it's like morally what is the right thing to do, not like, oh, I got this fact correct. Like, you don't have to say the fact. Like, if the fact is correct and you want to be right about that, like, you, that doesn't even, whatever. You know, like, I love this. Made even this less is, sense to me.
This is the newest, like, what is the sound of one hand clapping of like, oh, just mythical questions, and Haley's trying it, and I think it's okay. You look like Ian with his dinosaur puppet.
Yeah.
Ooh, should I get one of those?
Maybe. I mean, they're all the rage nowadays. Haley, speaking of Ian and the other BB22 house guests, so, you know, you did a ranking on your blog going into the season of the house guests, and, you know, going into this All-Star season. Well, what's been in your impression 2 weeks in? Obviously, the community certainly has a reception towards Big Brother 22 so far. Do you share their feelings or do you have your own perceptions of it?
I have been having a good time watching it. I was really pumped up watching the first episode and like cast getting released. And I'm somebody that I always tell you guys that if you want me to be on your Big Brother podcast, you need to ask me within the first 4 weeks because I've probably stopped watching otherwise. I'm hoping that I can keep watching this season. I'm having a good time. I've been so supremely bored with who's won HOH the last 3 weeks, though. Like, I can't imagine a worse trio to start the season off with leading the house. I want more back and forth. I just want more excitement. I think maybe the HOH competitions need to be a little bit more diversified so we can see somebody different winning. I'm bored by these three dumb white men. Like, Tyler's not dumb, I don't think. But, like, Memphis is, like, Memphis, like, what the hell? Cody is the dumbest person to have been on this show in a long time.
Wow.
Sorry, Cody. He's just, like, he's spewing out what Derek has told him. He can't like have a thought. And it's crazy because him and Memphis are both like, oh, we need each other because we don't know how to function and not a duo. It's like, come on, guys, like, let's get yourselves together now.
I think one of my favorite things is when people speak confidently about things they know nothing about. As someone who frequently does that themselves, like, I recognize that in other people. And Cody is definitely guilty of that. I wouldn't agree with the fact that he's the dumbest Big Brother player ever.
That's hyperbole.
He does know what an adjective is.
Yes. But in terms of speaking confidently about things he knows nothing about, like, he's up there for that.
Is he the dumbest person on the season, do you think?
Ooh.
No. Okay. So again, there's so many different types of intelligence.
Give me your dumb rankings.
Oof.
I mean, if we're doing rankings in terms of dumb, Kacer and Ian are at the bottom, right? Because like they are two of the brainier people that we've seen in the history of the show.
If we're talking about like, are you talking about like logical intelligence?
It is up to your interpretation.
Or are we telling them like if we put them on Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, who's most likely to fail?
Okay. I like that. Oof. Does Enzo know a lot about your writing?
I feel like Enzo, maybe that's one of the reasons why he wanted to have kids when he was a teenager, because then he would have accessibility to more grade school learning.
No, that's a good point. He actually might do well if he has children, because he has children. Janelle has children around that same age. Like, maybe they actually know fifth grade type things. I feel like David might be someone who doesn't know many fifth grade type things.
That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, this was not a good week for David. And I think if he brings those sort of skills of interpersonability into actual learning, it might not fit. I feel like, I don't know, Christmas. I don't know if Christmas is would be the worst, but she certainly would be like the teacher's pet. Right. Mm-hmm. She'd be like, this classroom's a team. I'm so happy I got this A+ from my team. I won us that pizza party.
Okay, who's the class clown and why is it Enzo?
Enzo.
Yeah, it's definitely Enzo.
Enzo's sitting in the back of the class the entire time, like telling stories about, like, you know, where his family went over the weekend and not paying attention whatsoever.
He told this story about how his parents met, and it was like, he said it was like the Italian Notebook, because like his mom and his dad were together, and then his mom moved to the United States, but and they were writing letters to each other, but then they stopped writing letters, and so then the mom came back to Italy to see the dad, but the dad was with someone else, and then and like found out, and then like came to America, and then they like rekindled and refell in love or something. Anyway, I never saw the Notebook. Is that close?
Isn't there more murder in the Notebook?
How much rain was there in Enzo's story?
Yeah,
is there a Ferris wheel? Is there some dangerous things going on?
Yeah, how much rain and how much Alzheimer's is in Enzo's story?
Is James Marsden there?
I don't think he chronicled those details in terms of either the weather, the large Ferris wheel type. What are those things called? Amusement rides? No, none of that.
Carnival rides. But yeah, was James Marsden there? Because that would have been really fun.
I do like James Marsden.
Like, imagine Enzo being like, oh, and you won't believe it. The dude, James Marsden was there.
Yo,
should we just talk about the movie Enchanted instead?
Let's make this an Enchanted podcast.
What a lovely film that is.
That is a really great film. Amy Adams, very deserving of an Oscar many times over. But yeah, it's an interesting point you bring up, Haley. And it's tough because like the result that bore out was frustrating and a little dispiriting, especially if you watch the feeds and how Nicole Anthony was essentially spun into a tizzy against people like Janelle and Kacer. I personally will say that I think while Memphis is kind of an a-hole in this season in particular, his HOH made for kind of a fun week, especially if you were following the feeds, because there was a surprising amount of chaos in the fact that, surprise, surprise, if you don't tell your alliance what you're doing, they're going to freak out about it. And so, you know, again, while it led to a result of like, you know, two people nominated, two outsiders nominated, veto not used, one person evicted, 10-2. There was a lot of stuff going on from the micro perspective that I found interesting, even if, to your point, Hilly, the result is definitely less than ideal.
I'm truly madly, deeply biased in everything I say and do. So if things aren't going exactly the way I want them to, then it's like hard for me to be like, oh, yeah, that's great. I can look at that objectively. And like, I just cannot. I have been watching Big Brother for a very long time. I think I started with season 3. Kacer was one of my favorite people to ever be on Big Brother. I loved him in his original season. I was so excited he got voted in All-Stars. I like almost died when I saw him in the rumors on this cast. So like, if he goes out this early, I'm going to lose my damn mind. I may not watch the rest of the season. And like, I don't want to see Janelle go out like in that. Oh, sorry. Are we allowed to do feed stuff?
Yeah, why the hell not?
Okay. I just, if like, I can't imagine if I lose either Janelle or K-Star in the third week, like I'm going to be so mad.
So, yes, I know that there are a lot of people that are rooting for Janelle to win the veto, but I personally would rather see Kacer try to play without Janelle than vice versa, because we've already seen that
twice.
I agree. Exactly. And I also love Kacer. I was shocked, just like you, Haley, that he was in the running. And he talked about this, like, everything happens for a reason. I got the call. I agreed to come back and do this. And I want to see him get a little bit more of an opportunity to do so.
Yeah. And I think especially Janelle, you know, obviously we all love Janelle as a character, but we've also seen her go the distance two times. And I think there is something to this idea of like, Kacer just making the jury in a Big Brother season is something completely new to his character. And so that would be, you know, a lot of fun to see. Plus, I think with the feed stuff, you know, if Janelle goes away, it's out of sight, out of mind for a lot of these people that many, many fans are getting annoyed with talking about Janelle constantly. So like, it might be a necessary evil to get rid
of them. You've convinced me that for Kacer to succeed, Janelle cannot be there.
It's so sad.
I know.
Obviously no one wants that, but like, that might be the necessary evil.
Wow.
Well, let's talk about this past week's boot. And let's talk about Nicole Anthony, because if we're talking about rough rides, this was a rough ride for Nicole Anthony. And you know what? Even she would admit it. When I talked to her yesterday in my exit interview with her, like, she was the first to be like, yep, I screwed up. And as she partially attributed it to the fact that, like, she playing back-to-back seasons was not a good idea. She said that as soon as she, like, slept that first night in the house, when she woke up, all the anxiety came flooding back. And you can imagine that affected a portion of her game, including getting extremely paranoid at being used and abused by people once again with Janelle and Kacer. It was not a great sight to see. I will personally say to all the people out there, they're like, I can't believe they had Nicole Anthony on. She is not an all-star. Shut your damn mouths. Like, here's the thing. Yes, was she a fantastic player? Not in this particular season. In the first season, she had some good stuff. But like, all-star does not also mean like 16 game bot best players of all time. She is, without argument, one of the most recent unanimous fan favorites. Like, just the surge of popularity she had in Big Brother 21 was incredibly insane. And part of it may have been due to the nature of that cast, but she was one of the most popular Big Brother players coming out of her season. I think if you're making an All-Stars cast and you want to invite back popular players, it's no question you go to Nicole Anthony. So I do not begrudge casting her whatsoever, even if it was a bit of a flame out for her. Haley, I know that you did not watch all of Big Brother 21, but what was your impression of Nicole Anthony during her time this season?
I felt bad for her. I do feel like she was really overwhelmed. Because of the nature of All-Star season, the usual things we see, like a cast skewing younger, and so that group kind of can form, and anyone older gets left out, where I feel like she was one of the younger people, especially, and she was so new and so fresh and hasn't really had a chance to go to a lot of these Big Brother events and meet people. So she was just kind of an easy outsider, and she just couldn't really seem to get into it. And like you said, she just had this leftover paranoia from last year. I think one of my favorite clips I've seen about the season so far, I can't remember what account I saw it on, but it was Nicole talking to some people about like what Janelle said to her, and how like Nicole said Janelle was like, oh, well, you're on the block now. It is what it is. Like, there's nothing we can do about it now. And then it like shows the conversation that she had with Janelle, and like Nicole is the one who actually said, well, it is what it is. Like,
oh,
you know what I mean? It was so funny to me. I'm sorry I cannot find it, but Not that I can't find it. I'm not looking for it. I'm going to be honest with you.
I think, Nicole, I don't disagree with the logic behind the casting choice, but I do think it was a challenging situation for her to be in as a player. And I'll give my prediction now, because I was a little nervous for her going into this game. Because I had her making the pre-jury. I said she would be overwhelmed by the all-star cast and all-star gameplay. She would fail to make strong connections in the house. And at the time I thought there was going to be some sort of Big Brother Edge of Extinction. So I wrote only bonds with the Big Brother Edge of Extinction players. And then Big Brother would include as many bird themed comps as possible while she's still in the house. And her Big Brother comic name would be the Pegasus. So, you know, in terms of like the gameplay, I was a little bit down on her, thinking that she was going to be overwhelmed by everything, in part because of what you said, Haley, with like all of those other pre-existing relationships that some of these players were going to come into the game with. She just doesn't have that. And she has that added stress and anxiety of the almost trauma that happened to her during her first season.
Yeah, and I mean, to add on top with my prediction, I had similar prospects for Nicole Anthony. I totally agree with you. I had her going out pre-jury as well. I said that her social hangings with people will be mistaken for allying with them, which happened to a certain extent with Janelle and Kacer. I also said she'd have to encounter her fear of birds one more time, which I guess we'll find out in future weeks. She just didn't last long enough, I suppose. No star-themed bird competitions right off the bat. I would say she gets nominated as a quote-unquote easy vote to appease both sides. Mm-hmm. Wow. She'll take the time during her final week to thank each and every person for being there, which I guess she did a bit when she was hugging everybody, even Memphis, after calling him out. And then I said, after being evicted, she'll have about 3/4 of the cast on her podcast. We'll see how much they ghost her considering previous circumstances. I said her closest ally would be Kevin, and her superhero name would be Uniclorn, which is a combination of Nicole and Unicorn.
Both are really good. Wait, do I still get a point? Just like,
yeah, why the hell not?
Both are really good and pretty on the spot, but I'm gonna have to give it to Liana because Unicorn makes me want to die.
What is it again?
Unicorn.
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 I mean, I hope to never hear that again.
That just rolls off the tongue. That sounds like some weird mutant, like...
Yeah, it sounds like an alien that Dirk Space Jammer would fight. Yeah, Unicorn. Exactly. Like, that's... Davon got into the Unicorn, like, Cyclops costume to fight Ian.
If only they had written that. Missed opportunity. They should really hire you, Mike.
Before we move on to more fun and games, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a word from our sponsors. And we are back, so let's keep on keeping on. Well, let's get into our first game here, because we're only 2 weeks into Big Brother 22, but suffice it to say, so many fashion choices have popped up, mostly stemming around the HOH from this past week in Memphis. It has been talked about a lot in podcasts that both Liana and myself have been on, but it's time. We are officially bringing our Survivor B&B game of Buff or Snuff to Big Brother in a game that that Matt Gillum actually suggested we call Bring It or Zing It, which I guess from a certain perspective is like, we will decide whether the person, you know, brought it with this outfit or if we're going to have to zing them for it. So I have compiled several different wardrobe choices from the Big Brother players over the past couple weeks. You can follow along at bit.ly/BB22, BB22, Bring or Zing. And if you haven't experienced one of these segments before, we're just going to go one pick at a time, reviewing house guest fashion choices, and either we give it a thumbs up, aka bring it, or a thumbs down, aka zing it. But we have to start here with, of course, one of the big talking points of the week around one of the big talking point house guests of the week. Haley, give me all your thoughts about Memphis's denim vest.
I love it. I think it's great. I own shirts like this. I think it's cute. I don't like Memphis, but I think he's hot. And I think, like, maybe pairing this vest with some jeans, it would really give me some Canadian tuxedo vibes.
I was going to say, is this a little, because, like, you're, you know, the fabric of Canada might be denim. Is he just speaking to you with this outfit?
I like it. A lot of people hate this. People are going to at me. I love the confidence to wear a sleeveless denim shirt. Come on.
I think my biggest question is, did he cut the sleeves off of a denim shirt, or did he manage to find this somewhere?
Listen, he's from Florida. You better believe they sell these things in bulk in Florida.
It's gonna be hot, though.
I mean, listen, that's why they cut the arms off. Listen, I'm not gonna go for a jean jacket. You give me a jean vest, though. I'm all on business here. Yeah, because I'm looking at like the cuts on it. It looks like it's a pretty clean cut. So I would imagine, unless Memphis is like very good with a sewing machine, I don't think he necessarily created his own denim vest.
I don't know. It does look like it could be cut. I think the other question is like the fact that he just wears it as its own shirt. Like, I don't know if this is supposed to be styled over a shirt as a second layer, or if really you're supposed to go commando with only this on the top.
Front commando.
Right. Top commando.
Top commando.
That's what we like to call Winnie the Poohing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't that...
it's the opposite.
Winnie the Pooh only has a shirt, right?
Winnie the Pooh was shirtless and only had shorts, then that would be Winnie the Poohing it.
It's opposite.
It's like Tarzan versus Donald Duck.
I'm sorry, I thought you were meaning that he should wear this with no pants.
No, I'm okay.
Unbuttoned with no pants, I think that could be a look.
Well, that's the thing. I think for me, it comes down to the buttons. Like, there is a very tricky equilibrium when it comes to the number of buttons you could have unbuttoned and like the signal that it's putting out there. Mm-hmm.
This Curly is a good amount of buttons.
Yeah, I think it's two now counting the top. And I think that's okay, especially if he is trying to give off this image. Like, I feel like if you button a denim vest all the way up to the top, I'm institutionalizing you. That is just a choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of sexy with it like unbuttoned that way. I think really I just have so many questions about this, but it does feel like something that you would buy in Forever 21. So I think I probably have to zing it here, but I want to know more about it. I'm intrigued.
Mm. Yeah, like, I'll take it out on a second date, but, like, I'm not gonna get it crab legs anytime soon.
Right, exactly. Like, we're not going to Red Lobster, okay? This ain't no fancy establishment, especially with that denim vest.
Well, no, now this I'm is wondering, a roadside tip truck.
Now I'm wondering, like, with Memphis's, you know, however many restaurants, like, could this be a uniform that he makes people wear?
This is one of Puya and I's favorite comments about, like, Memphis looks like he owns 37 Long John Silvers, and I feel like this outfit could definitely be, like, fit with that aesthetic.
Well, let's stick on the Memphis train, because in the first week, Memphis complained a lot about the cold of the house, to the point where, I guess, maybe you're right, Liana, maybe Memphis has some secret sewing talents that we don't know about, because Memphis has fashioned himself a number of scarves that he has just promptly wrapped around himself as he huddles for warmth inside the house. So, Liana, what do you think about Memphis's various scarf looks?
Yeah, these are fabulous. I love these. This is something I could absolutely see in like a winter FabFitFun box of get your big old oversized scarf, wrap it around you, stay cozy, stay warm. And the fact that he assembled these himself just adds points. So definitely Memphis is bringing it.
What do you think, Haley?
Big fan, 10 out of 10 would wear this outfit.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm. Do you have a preference between the two? We sort of have like the speckled black, and then we have like a legitimate orange blanket that he's wrapped all around his neck.
I'd have to go with the speckled. I think it like gives a nice like cozy vibe. You say orange, I think it's a bit of a mustard yellow. Mm. Mustard yellow, not my color, so that close to my face, it just wouldn't work for me, so I'd have to go with the other one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. But I do like the fabric that the blanket is made out of. So
yeah.
I'm going to pick a blanket. I do like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The way that like it's shaped around his neck, it looks like with the speckled one, the first one, that he sort of cut a hole in it and poked his head through, almost like a shawl or something.
A poncho,
as opposed to the other mustard yellow blanket, which he wrapped fully around himself. I might have to choose the latter, because I just admire the volume of it. You know, like, this is building past his shoulders almost to make him look like he has no neck. And I kind of admire the fact that he wants to change his body shape. Maybe he's trying to come off as less athletic to everyone else. He did win an HOH and a veto back to back. If everyone thinks he looks like a giant mustard blob, nobody's going to be gunning for him.
Next level strategy. Blob yourself.
This is what it reminds me of. I just put it in our chat.
Okay.
Let's look at this image that Haley has shared here. I have no idea what to expect. Yes. Okay. So this is the Lenny Kravitz oversized big old scarf. That's exactly the aesthetic that I'm getting from this. 100%. I don't know who made, you know, obviously his is a blanket, not an actual scarf that Lenny Kravitz has, but it's true.
It's close, though, because Lenny Kravitz's scarf also looks like a blanket with the fringe and everything. So I'm going to have to say he brought it here. He's able to take these lemons or mustard and make them into lemonade. He's taking things from around the house and helping them comfort himself while also looking a little fashionable at the same time.
Ugh, starting fashion trends. Who would have thought? Memphis.
And it also makes me wonder, should I bring the denim vest in retrospect? Because think about the personal sacrifices for comfort Memphis is making. He is so cold all the time. For him to wear a sleeveless denim vest, his body temperature has to be dropping at least 10 degrees by wearing it instead of his usual blanket scarf.
I love the concept, though, that he doesn't cover his arms. Like, he's just all about the torso. Like, the vest covers the torso. The scarf blanket only really covers his torso. Maybe that's like he thermal regulates only through there and his arms can stick out. That's fine.
Yeah, you lose 80% of your body heat through your torso. It's all about efficiency. All right, fine. One more Memphis thing I need to point out here, because this is something that Liana, actually, you reached out to me about. I think Dalton Ross pointed this out to me as well when I asked for suggestions. If you go to the veto meeting this week, Memphis is wearing a really interesting pair of shorts. We can't tell if it's shorts or a bathing suit, where it is split down the middle with two completely different designs. On his right side is a chestnut checkers, white and black checker design. On the left side is like a bathing suit design with palm fronds and looks like some flowers in there. Liana, what do you think about this Jekyll and Hyde bathing suit that Memphis has going on?
Yeah, this immediately stood out to me because you see him from different directions and you're like, oh, his shorts are, oh, no, wait, what? Like, what are you even wearing? We see this often on RuPaul's Drag Race where you have outfits that are like split down the middle.
Does this count as a 2-in-1 look?
Yeah, right. So I don't know if that's what Memphis is going for, but it was just like, where does one buy Florida, I guess, where the denim vests flow in abundance? So do these shorts with dual patterns on either leg.
I don't know. Haley, I think Liana stumbled upon something. Could Memphis have fashioned these shorts for whatever reason, took patterns from two different shorts and sewed them together?
It's possible. I think you should rethink doing it in the future, though.
So would you wear these, Haley?
No, I wouldn't. I'm not super into pattern mixing. I think it can be done when it's a more simplistic pattern. This is not it. I'd even be fine with a two-tone short if it was like, say, one side was the banana leaf and one or the palm fronds and one was just like a plain pink, the same pink. But these are two very bold patterns that I just don't really think should be going together.
It's a look.
I might have to zing it. I'm into the Franken shorts because I think it said something. You know, Memphis was someone who wanted to play both sides this week. He wanted to show like, look, I'm good with everybody. What better way to show that than showing the two patterns, showing I can work with everybody. I can work with the checkers. I can work with the Janelle and Kacer, the ones that are moving methodically like chess pieces. And I can work with the young, fun, happy group of the palm fronds and roses. Like, I think Memphis is really showing his cards here. And the fact that nobody caught on to it via his wardrobe choices honestly speaks to his gameplay even more.
I am living for this comparison to strategy. Now, my next question to you both is, what does the denim vest represent? What strategic move does this display for one old Memphis?
I think it's that sometimes you just need to make a bold game move to get yourself further.
I totally agree. He's saying, I have my guns a-blazing, to the point where he is showing his guns off. He's not holstering them.
Welcome to the gun show.
All right, let's move on from our Memphis-centric stuff here, because we got to talk about, you know, we're, and Enzo is always game here on the B&B to the point where he was literally a game last week. And we have to talk about what he wore in this most recent eviction. He wore a Brigade shirt, but he did a really interesting job with the design. So if you missed it, it's also a sleeveless look. It's a sleeveless, like, charcoal black top. And when red text, it says the Brigade, but it's spelled B-R-A-G Grenade D-E, which I guess, Liana, is this the Brigade? Is that what we should call this from now on?
That is literally what we were calling it, is it's the Brigade. Because why wouldn't you replace it with the D? I mean, okay, yes, it's round, sure, but at least it looks more like a D than it does like an A.
Why did they spell the I wrong in Brigade and turn it to an A?
I saw this and I thought it was a reference to when they told Brittany about the alliance and then they called it the Brigade because she was like now involved in it.
Maybe. That feels like a very veiled reference.
I know. I find it much more likely that they misspelled it. I didn't even think of that option until just now.
Yeah, no, I definitely believe that that is what's happening here. Like, what an odd choice. And I guess like, grenade, because brigade rhymes with grenade.
Did they even talk about grenades in their season? Like, I feel like that could have been a thing, right? If they said, oh, it's the Brigade Grenade. But I feel like that wasn't even brought up, which is surprising for Menzo, who is a master of rhymes, as we know.
I mean, the bomb squad, you would use a grenade, right? Like, I don't know why the brigade would use the grenade. Why would you wear a shirt with your own alliance name on it from last season, especially when it's a strategy that's been so prevalent in modern Big Brother?
Unless he said, no, that was the brigade. This is the Brigade. It's a different thing. It's a company.
Oh my god, like, go on. Yeah, this is
it's like Gary Hogaboom in Survivor Guatemala and be like, no, I'm Gary Hawkins, I went to the same college as him, but I'm a landscaper, like completely different person. It's sort of him. I don't know, my theory is also that he possibly wanted brigade shirts made for this season, had a misprint and said, screw it. I guess I'll have to use this. So I'm going to walk in with Brigade shirts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is entirely possible. Or maybe it's just painting the target so large. It's a Dr. Will type strategy that like people just, I don't know, write him off. No idea.
I'm painting the grenade so large you can't pull the pin on it, yo.
Yo.
I'm going to have to zing this because the spelling is just outlandish to me.
Brigade.
The Brigade.
Also, he definitely cut the sleeves off himself. Like, are we agreeing to that?
Yeah. Oh,
that
and he did the split this too? Man-made.
Yeah. And then he also, you know, it was a crew neck, and then he cut it to try to make it a V-neck as
and
well.
And then he like, gave up.
Yeah.
Do you think he saw Memphis's shirt and said, I need to make something like that?
Oh, yeah. Sort of like when Paulie got Paul's haircut. Like, he's like, oh, man, yo, this could be good. Let me go to my Brigade merchandise and start making him V-necks.
Brigade. So dumb.
I think that's why we should officially call it now, is call it the Brigade.
Yes, the Brigade strategy. It wins games, baby.
Well, let's talk about, you know, you talked about Enzo possibly mimicking Memphis's style choices. Apparently the mimicry goes back even further, because some people have noticed that Enzo has kind of started to blanket, a la Audrey Middleton. Here are a couple pictures. Both pictures are Enzo in sunglasses. One, he's wearing a gray hoodie, like Audrey's infamous gray blanket and hood. And the other one, he is literally blanketing with what looks like these ribbed blankets are just the thing to do in the Big Brother house. Haley, what do you think about Enzo's unintentional homage to the great Audrey?
Okay, first of all, in the second photo, it looks like he's wearing the blanket, but in the mirror shot, it looks like he's also shirtless.
Yes, I do see that. You can see his reflection in the wall behind him, and he does not appear, unless it is a skin-toned shirt, to be wearing anything. So, again, interesting choice.
Yeah, I do love the homage. I would say wearing sunglasses inside isn't, like, my thing, unless I'm in a store and I'm trying to read something and I have to like put on my prescription sunglasses because I can't see that far. Like, is it the lights are so bright in here that they need to wear the sunglasses kind of thing?
Yeah, we do see that happen in Big Brother. So because of the studio lights to light the whole set. And that's kind of
And I think this season, for one reason or another, also has a lot more fluorescent lights. And I think that also that really, you know, nearly 24 hours a day, I think, has a real impact on the eyes.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Or he's just trying to be cool.
When they go to bed, do they turn off the kitchen lights and stuff? Or is it like on all the time?
No, they turn them off, I think.
They probably take it down. They would probably take it down if anything, just because like the considering how much light, because like one of the rooms, the comics rooms, doesn't have a door, like it bleeds in from the hallway. So I can imagine they want to get rid of as much ambient light as possible to make these house guests go to bed.
Where do I buy these ribbed blankets? Like, this is the same one that Memphis had, but this one is gray.
I like that. I was about to type ribbed blankets into Google, and I stopped myself.
That's an incognito mode search.
Yep, exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm going to say bring it to the hoodie look, because I feel like Enzo is doing, like, this poker player realness type of thing. Like, this very much feels like, I don't know, it's combination poker player and, like, Unabomber. But again, you know what? Maybe that's what the Brigode is like his front for being the new school Unabomber. But I don't know about the blanket, because again, if you're just wearing a blanket as a top, that feels like a step too far. Like people put that on top of them. I don't want it touching Enzo's sweaty ass body.
Yeah, I think add a shirt and then style it in the same way that Memphis did. And then I think you're rocking.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I'm saying bring it. Like, the confidence it takes to wear a toque and a blanket while not wearing a shirt is something to behold.
What do you think about Enzo's hat game in particular, Haley? You talked about the toque here. He's got infamously the prison mic bandana that he wears around a lot. Like, is Memphis rocking the headgear this season?
Yeah, I think it's a good commitment to the bit.
Yeah, I mean... He just gives me, remember when Derek in his season was trying to be cool, like with the kids, and he was like wearing like the toques and the backward hats and all that kind of stuff. That's definitely the vibe I'm getting here. And so I can't tell if Enzo is actually cool or just pretending to be cool. I mean, he was a nipple salesman, so I'm going to go with cool.
Yeah, that is the coolest job, by the way, is selling those little baby nipples. All right, let's move on here. Ian's punishment costume. As Dirk Space Jammer. Listen, it's an automatic bring it for Janelle's star costume. So I just skipped right over that with the punishment outfit. And we're going to move on here. And this is Ian's full Dirk regalia, which includes the silver and black spandex, what looks like some sort of boots, the cape, which I didn't recognize at first, but it has like a lime green fur lining to it with a nice pattern inside. And then a nice old headdress. I mean, Liana, I feel like this is a runway ready look.
Oh, that was my first thought as well with this whole outfit.
Seeing Judy Jetson Hooker.
This is a Judy Jetson Hooker look for sure, especially with that headpiece. It's so ornate. Like, I don't know if they had that or where they found that. It doesn't really seem to go with the rest of the outfit, though, but it is very fancy. And the cape is something to behold. The whole thing is so incredibly ugly, but I would probably wear this for Halloween. So I'm gonna bring it.
What about you, Haley?
It was kind of them to give him like the waist sash with the triangle that hangs down.
Mm-hmm.
Would not wear personally. That's all I've got.
I would wear this personally. I think you would.
Yeah.
I mean, I would wear this all around town. I think this is a very fun look. I also like the high collars. Like, it gives off a lot of regalness to it. I'm obsessed with the cape. I'm sad we didn't see the cape that much. Just because I love the patterning on the cape. I love the weird green to it. We're gonna have a lot to say about Dirk Space Jammer later on, but his outfit, no wonder he lands as many out of this world babes as he does, because man, what a magnet.
I love anything with a cape. So sexy. So yeah, definitely he's bringing it.
Yeah, damn you, Edna Mode. We're bringing capes here. let's move on here. Let's move over to the ladies of the house. And we're starting with Nicole Franzel, I guess now just Nicole, because she's the sole Nicole, the Nixole remaining. So Nicole has a gingham two-piece bathing suit. And usually that's nothing to write home about. But as Mel pointed out to us on Twitter, Nicole infamously won Big Brother 18 in a gingham dress. So Haley, do you
think it was a romper, Michael?
Oh, yes, it was a romper. My apologies. But do you think this is a purposeful callback to that? And from that perspective, do you bring it or zing it?
Either way, I'm bringing it. I really like this. I think it's cute. I think this is just a weird shot of the bow. It just needs to be tied a little differently. If that's a callback, I think that's hilarious and fun. And if it's not, I think it's still a cute bathing suit.
I think it's probably one of those things where she just likes the pattern and the style and then ends up buying 50 versions of the same thing without kind of recognizing it. Like, that's definitely me. It's like, yeah, my favorite color is red. Well, then why do I only own blue t-shirts? Because I always buy blue. Like, oh, yeah. I like this. I like this. So I think that that's probably the case. I don't think it's a direct reference, but that was the first thing I thought when I saw this bathing suit was, oh, that's the outfit she won in.
So now the question is, if she makes it to the final two again, you know, we saw Paul infamously wore that Hawaiian shirt for his second finale in a row. Is Nicole going to wear this gingham bathing suit to the final two? Because she knows it's good luck. The pattern is, at least.
She looks fabulous, so she should.
She rocks it. It would just be a little interesting to have someone walk out of the Big Brother house in a bathing suit, whether it's her bathing suit or whether it's Memphis wearing his two-tone bathing suit.
I mean, Austin walked out of the house without shoes, so.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I'm going to bring it as well. I think this is a really fun pattern. It makes me wonder, like, how much does she enjoy picnics? Does she have, like, a formative memory with this pattern, hence why everything is gingham? But like with Memphis, she is making a statement out there in the open, and nobody's biting. Nobody's even noticing. And you know what? That's something that should be admired from Nicole Franzel. And we move from Franzel over to the other side of things, quite literally. Let's talk about Jedi Janie here. And we mentioned the star costume, but there was an infamous shot on the live feeds, I think, last week of Janelle chillaxing in bed, sporting some kick-ass red pumps. Liana, is Janelle bringing it, or should we zing it, these wearing the shoes in the bed of Big Brother?
Well, these are her red bottom Louboutins, Mike. These are the ultimate status here. And not like on the 90 Day Fiancé where they paint their shoes, the bottom of their shoes red to make them look like this level of class. No, Janelle is just rocking it here. And I love how casual she is about the whole thing. I think that's what really makes this look. It's the confidence to rock it.
Haley, what do you think about the choice to wear shoes in bed?
Not my favorite, but I do, again, I love the juxtaposition of wearing like high class shoes in like a weird outfit.
Yeah, with her star costume.
Like, she's really just gotta be like, well, I'm going all out now.
Yeah, I mean, this is really a look that says, like, I don't care like what you think of me. And I think considering the attitude against her from her other house guests, like, that's great. It shows just like, I'm going to wear shoes in bed. Yeah, I'm going to crumble cookies. Like, who the hell cares? Like, I love this rebellious attitude from Janelle. And then she sort of is showing it here with these sort of like Miranda Priestley, not Miranda Priestley, who's the character from The Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah, Miranda Priestley.
It's very Miranda Priestley-esque to me of like, I'm going to wear my kick-ass pumps in bed, and like, you're going to balk over them.
But like, she's still considerate because she lays down her costume before she rests her shoes on the costume. So she's not actually on the bed, because I will say that is a pet peeve of mine. I hate it in the Big Brother house when people have their dirty shoes like on the bed. Ugh.
I will say these look pretty new too, so like, I don't think there's a lot of outside world dirt on them.
Not a lot of realtor dust from all the houses she's toured in these new shoes.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on here to Dani Briones. And this is sort of going to be a house shot, and also included in her cast photo, because Dani had quite the noticeable hat in her cast photo that I don't know if this is the same hat, but there's a very similar version that she's wearing in this particular photo. With a nice, like, pinkish, reddish scarf that is very, like, I don't know, Troop Beverly Hills-esque to me. Liana, what do you think about Danny Briones' take here, particularly from the hat perspective?
I do believe it's the same hat. The only difference is I think she put a little band at the base of the cap before it goes out to the brim. That's the only thing, because I'm looking at them side by side. So they do appear to be the same, although I would love the idea that she brought two essentially identical hats into the house together, just depending on her mood. But these definitely give me a little bit of like the Pharrell, big old Pharrell hat vibe.
Or like the Arby's hat.
Yes, the Arby's hat. The Little Prince hat that had the snake in it, like that, you know, that kind of is that kind of jam.
Yes, essentially, Danny is channeling. You know what this reminds me of? Curious George.
Yes, that's what it is. Oh, how many references can we get out of
the Danny in the big yellow hat? So from that perspective, I'm going to have to say bring it, because I think that, you know, she is sort of Bret Nicole Frangel as like her little Curious George monkey. And so I do sort of love that relationship that she's building. And I don't know how I feel about hats indoors. I think I've sort of been ingratiated with that high school attitude, right, of like outside of hat day, you couldn't wear hats in school. But I think Danny's able to pull it off.
Public school did a number on you, Mike.
I mean, listen, 12 years of anything will do something to you.
Yeah, I mean, same. I have the exact same thing between school rules and then my dad, like, you don't wear hats indoors.
What do you think, Haley, about this indoor hat?
I love this look. I wish I could pull off hats like this. I actually have one kind of similar that I might wear tomorrow.
Do it.
I don't know if I can pull off the hat and the bandana at the same time. I really like this look. I think Danny has like the nicest style. I love it.
Well, you know what you can do, Haley? Take a picture of yourself wearing this hat tomorrow. And since you're wearing that hat and you're blonde, at JC Moonves, like, hey, it's me, Busy Phillips, having a great Sunday, and see if she notices.
Okay, I'll try it.
I think she might have face blindness.
That could be the case. I would not be surprised.
All right, let's move on here to our next one. And we're staying on blonde, because we have to talk about Tyler, our incoming HOH here. And Liana, you pointed it out last week. Tyler's like occasional hairstyle, which is, you know, longer and parted down the middle, and choice of glasses. Haley, give me all your thoughts about this.
I love them. I love the clear frames. I think they're so cool. I could not pull them off. And I think that's maybe why I like them so much on other people, because I'm like, well, I could never do that. I want to see him with a low bun. I think he'd look really cute like that.
Because he really just does the high bun or hair down.
Yeah.
I don't think I've really ever seen him with a low bun.
I think it would look really, like, chic.
I think for me, I don't know if I would say chic. It's just hard, especially just because watching Tyler and his personality on the feed, the last thing I think of when I think of Tyler is chic. But I will say, I think if you put him in a tailored suit and did exactly what you're suggesting, Haley, with the hair, I think he could have that look. For me, it's the combination of the shape of the glasses, the hair, curly hair parted down the middle, plus he wears like sometimes Hawaiian or just very brightly colored, heavily patterned shirts. I just can't get Weird Al out of my head. That is the only thing I can think of when I look at Tyler when he's in his full getup.
He looks like a middle school art teacher. Essentially, like that teacher that you're like, okay, they're a little off, but and that's why they sort of got put into an art classroom with a bunch of supplies where like they're very creative and they're gonna make their students be like, listen, just do whatever the macrame tells you to do and let your vision guide you. Like that feels like what Tyler is channeling with this look. The glasses, now this shot has the glasses more close up, and I feel like actually from a close up, ironically enough, he's pulling them off a bit more than maybe from further away, because I think what the clear frames do is almost frame it like grandma glasses to a certain extent. But I do think the more you zoom in, the more you're like, OK, he's kind of pulling it off. It's just ironically enough, the less you need glasses to look at Tyler's glasses, the more bad they look.
Yeah, it's not. I don't want to. I'm going to zing it, but like. I do know what, you know what? No, he's bringing it. It's not a strong bringing it for me, but I can't zing this look.
I mean, I just want him to, you know, break it. He's going to have to break into some parody songs from BB Rexha before this is all over to really make the transformation complete.
Yeah, I would love that.
What rhymes with cloud power rap? Okay, let's move on to our final one here. And this is Miss Anita Vito. This is Kevin Campbell's drag persona. Cannot think of two better people to break down this outfit. We'll do a quick boot or toot of Anita Vito's look. Liana, what do you think?
This is quick drag realness here.
Yeah, this is Big Brother being like, Kevin, get into quick drag.
You have 20 minutes to get into quick drag. The padding is way too low. I don't know who made his pads, but they need to go up a little bit higher. Just pull those up.
Yeah, it looks like Kevin has like ham hocks for thighs.
He looks like he's stealing ham hocks from the grocery store. But overall, I do really love this outfit. It's definitely cash going to the grocery store type look. No beat on the mug, but overall the outfit, it's a bring it.
What do you think, Haley?
I agree about the padding. I need it to be a bit higher. I need the boobs to be padded a little bit more just to kind of exaggerate that shape. I can't hate it. I wish it was different sunglasses. This just isn't my like total taste of sunglasses. But I like it.
Statement necklace.
I think she needs a really bold, bright red lip.
Yeah, I was gonna say like it's there, but not. I mean, listen, you have to match it at the bright red balls around your neck with some sort of like,
whoa,
with some sort of makeup choice, and maybe she's like, I don't need to do my eyes, so I'll just put on the sunglasses. I will say the wig looks better than maybe I thought, especially after like he's assuming like, yeah, I'll pack this away and like, you know, send it away to the Big Brother house. I don't know if he has brushed the wig at all beforehand, but it looks pretty nicely, you know, packed in for everything.
It's a shake and go wig, but it has a lot of volume to it. So I don't know, like, if he styled it beforehand, but it definitely comes from shake and go. Like, this is not professionally styled, but he could have added a little zhuzh to it to, like, make it realness. But, okay, here's the thing. So I saw this meme the other day that was an advertisement, and it said, statement necklace? Why not let your neck make the statement? I just thought of that and I don't know what that means. And I laughed really hard at it because then the meme was the guy walking around being like, oh, my neck.
Wait, so what is it supposed to advertise? Like giraffe?
No, I don't know what it was for. It was just like the clip and then the meme. And so I don't know what it was from. But it
feels
like, yeah,
that feels like Julie Chen wrote that copy. Say something that sounds like it makes sense, but the more you break it down, the less it does.
Yes, that's exactly what it was. And it's semi based on like another phrase, right? Which is what she did this week.
And I'm Julie Chen Moonves. And remember, statement necklace, more like make your neck the statement.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, God. I do love this look. And I can imagine like the Drag Race-esque Kevin narration is going to be like, after a night of bashing on Janelle and Kacer, she's come back and ready for more.
Yeah, right. When whatever the mini challenge was that week, like this is a full embodiment.
Yeah, this is Kevin does the reading challenge and he goes like, Janelle, you're running this game and you're a terrible person. Like, no, Kevin, your reads are off in more ways than one.
Oh, yeah. The library is closed for Kevin. Sorry, Kevin.
Well, for a lot of people this season, though, is the thing.
That is true.
The last thing, I just put a picture up there, as I mentioned, of Dani Briones and very pretty actress Busy Phillips, VP, BP, if you will. Haley, now that we've got the cross comparison, do you agree with Julie's statement? Is there a resemblance here?
These two photos that you put together, Mike, I think they do look similar. It's not something I would have ever come to on my own, but it's hard for me to dispute it.
Yeah, they have very similar nose shapes, and the way that they smile looks very similar. Like, their cheeks also look very similar. So, not gonna lie, I agree with Haley. Based on this photo, their eye shape is a little different, but they do look kind of similar.
Yeah, and I think it also helps that they're wearing the same pattern, right? They're wearing some form of dots. So maybe that also helps the comparison. Yeah, I mean, listen, if I am looking to hire a Busy Phillips impersonator and I get Dani Briones, am I going to be upset a little bit, but not like horrifically, this person looks nothing like Busy Phillips? I'll be like, okay, go, you know, entertain my son at his birthday party, Busy Phillips impersonator. And then I'll pay you at the end of the day.
My favorite thing about that was when she said, you look very pretty last week, which I think was its own statement, but like it was talked about, you looked very pretty last week. Like, you don't look pretty now. You looked pretty
it's a very weird implication. Like, oh, last week you were so pretty. Imagine if you went to go see someone and they said, oh my God, you were so beautiful last time I saw you. Like, what does that imply?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't look good now. I don't. Oh, Julie, this goes back to the whole Julie thing.
And also, like, why is she making, like, I guess she wants to give that as a birthday present, right? Of like, which I'm very lucky that Julie Chen Moonves did not like greet me for my birthday and say, you know, I look like that handsome actor Andy Samberg, and that's my birthday present, I suppose. It's like Julie Chen telling you what celebrity you look like.
Yeah, but last week.
But last week, exactly. No, not this week. Last week was definitively Andy Samberg. This week is more Jesse Eisenberg. So I guess maybe it depends week to week. Maybe Julie saw a different celebrity in Danny this week.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe she was just binge watching Cougar Town or something like that. Like, oh yeah, Busy Phillips.
That's a good idea. You should do that.
Binge watching Cougar Town?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe it's a good alternate to Big Brother 22. If you want to watch Danny Briones in action, go watch Cougar Town. It's available on demand.
Great actress.
Not enough hats, though.
Oh my God. You look like very pretty Big Brother contestant. Danny Briones.
That's what I want to significantly, if I ever get the chance to interview her, I'll be like, did anyone ever tell you there's a Big Brother contestant named Danny Briones? Last week, you look very much like her.
Yeah. I'm going to start using that. Like, last week, this blah, blah, blah. Whatever. I'll figure it out. Okay, so I have something. I maybe should have brought this up during the predictions, but one of my friends made this comparison to original OG All-Stars One, which was the eviction order was Allison, a feisty blonde, gets evicted first. Nokomis, a quirky girl, gets evicted second, which now we have Keisha and Nicole A. Week three of Big Brother OG was Will and I think Chicken George, with Chicken George winning the veto, where Will gave his infamous I hate you all speech and Jace gets backdoored, which is why I'm holding out hope that maybe this week we will see something similar. So I guess my question is, Mike, who do you think fits what role? Like, who gives the Will speech? Is it Kacer? Right. Is it Janelle?
I think Janelle will be the most likely to give the I hate you all speech, not just because of her connection to Dr. Will, but also if she finds out that people have been talking crap about her nonstop. I think it's something very fitting that she could say to the entire house. The Chicken George thing, I feel like if
Kacer wins veto, he's Chicken George.
Yeah, well, I would say, like, you know, if it wasn't Kacer who was nominated next to Janelle, if it was somebody like, if Nicole Anthony had survived and gotten nominated, like, I'm not going to say Nicole Anthony was the Chicken George of this season, but like,
I'm saying that's Enzo.
Oh, you know what? It could be Enzo. If Enzo and Janelle were nominated, Enzo wins the How Much Do You Want It contest by becoming a blueberry, the blue and shaving his head, which is fine because he has about 300 headpieces anyway. And he takes himself off the block. And then, you know, Janelle gives her speech and then, see, I don't think Kacer is the Jace, though, right? I don't see Jacer, though I guess Jace was sort of going around being a bit of a blowhard. And I do feel like Kacer, while I do love him, was being a bit aggressive in these first couple of weeks. I can't really think of anybody that was like, actually, you know what? No, Memphis is the Jace. Absolutely, Memphis is the Jace.
We were both waiting for you to get there.
So if Memphis got backdoored, then yeah, that would totally be. Plus, Jace won HOH in the first week of Big Brother 7. Memphis won HOH in the second week of Big Brother 22. So, like, I feel like that would track completely. So, unfortunately, this is where the timelines diverge.
Yeah, I was trying to force fit it also. Like, okay, so if I do make Kacer Chicken George, Janelle gives the Will speech, then who is it that gets backdoored? Yeah, I was thinking Memphis was one, especially because Tyler is like not crazy about Memphis. So that could absolutely play out.
That'd be
right?
Fun.
Yes, right.
I mean, yeah, and then he gets evicted unanimously. That would certainly be interesting. Thinking about the OG All-Stars, actually, I know you made the comparison between the two. I know last week I said, you know, which week is better. And again, I know a lot of people were disappointed in this week, but I have to say, pound for pound, I would actually put week two of Big Brother 22 above week two of Big Brother 7. Because week two of Big Brother 7 was actually like a little ho-hum. That was when Kacer won and he made that infamous like proclamation of, okay, we got to get out the people in the middle. And so he nominates, I think, Diane and Nokomis. Mm-hmm. And Nokomis gets booted pretty handily because she's a bigger threat. Like, there was more eventfulness, I think, in the week of Big Brother 22, even if the result was straightforward, than in Big Brother 7, where season 6 just continued to cement their stranglehold of the house.
Mm-hmm. Nokomis was somebody else I loved very much growing up.
Did you love Nicole A? As equally, or is this also where the timelines diverge?
Diverge.
Okay. I think also what happened last week with Memphis is the HOH is that it put a lot of cracks into place that I think will then continue and will become relevant a little bit later in the season, because Memphis was just willing to not listen, not care about his alliance, and just kind of like do his own thing. Like, this is what I want. I'm going to do it. I'm an old school wild card player. That's Memphis. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how these comparisons either line up or don't line up moving forward. A girl can dream.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we could be facing a scenario where the Chicken George character is in one of the best spots to win the game at this point.
The Chicken George character. Whomever he may be.
Cat Enzo.
Yeah. Okay. So the next game that we're going to play, I have been excited about all week. So Ian got a punishment this past week as he was declared safe, where he had to, as we talked about, become Dirk Space Jammer. But not only did he have to become Dirk Space Jammer, he also had to, at different times, act out various characters that are part of the, what was the title? Star Wars?
All Star Wars.
Yeah, and a couple
I'm
other.
Still surprised they were able to even use that.
It was definitely someone in the, you know, the copyright department being like, add a couple more words just to make it seem.
Yeah,
like
I guess if you do add
different.
All in front of something, maybe it's not defying the copyright.
Yeah, I don't know how that works, but maybe.
Like if I made a movie with talking animals called All Zootopia, do you think Disney would sue?
All Zootopia. Yeah. Okay, so he had to act out, Ian had to act out different scenes, and there were four major scenes he had to act out. Numbers 25, 36, 54, and 79.
No, it was so close!
I know, believe me, I was incredibly disappointed at the numbers here. But there, so we're going to go through each of these scenes, and for your game, you're going to have to guess what the next either word or phrase is in the play, in the skit. So I'll give you options. It's either A or B, so you have a 50% chance to get the correct answer. But just to set the stage a little bit, there are four major characters here. You have Dirk Space Jammer himself. You have the Queen Andromeda, which, by the way, I do not believe Space All-Stars Star Wars passes the Bechdel test.
Oh, no. Cancel. Hashtag cancel all Star Wars.
Yeah. We also have Hugo 825, who is Dirk Space Jammer's robot, and the villain of the film, Baron Odious.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So we're going to go through in numerical order. Obviously, we're missing scenes in here, but hopefully we can get an idea of what the plot is based on these scenes. So we're going to start with scene 25. This features Dirk Space Jammer and the Queen talking with one another. Okay. Oh, no, I got it. Okay. You're a damn fine pilot.
Oh, my God.
Emphasis on fine. Don't even try it, Dirk Space Jammer.
Try what?
Everyone in the galaxy knows you have an affinity for A, sexy aliens, or B, royal women. Mike, we'll go to you first.
So here's the thing. As I mentioned on the Sunday recap, I personally feel like these scenes are pretty erotic. This one in particular. Now, look, am I talking like over the pants? No. If anything, it's like, you know, very romantic eye gestures to each other. But I feel like it wouldn't be. I'm trying to question if it's past the rating of all Star Wars to say sexy women. I feel like if I'm writing this scene, I want to try to get out that exposition early on that this is Queen Andromeda, especially if this is the first scene to introduce the character. So I'm going to go with B. I think introducing that she is a piece of royalty. I think, and I don't think a piece of royalty would also use the word sexy. It just feels beneath her.
That is correct. Yes, royal women was the phrase. So everyone in the galaxy knows you have not. What is the, even the voice I was doing? Whatever. This is going to change multiple times. This is the queen speaking. Everyone in the galaxy knows you have an affinity for royal women. Okay. And then we shall continue the scene. My reputation precedes me. And then he strips off clothing. Like he strips off his vest. Okay.
Okay.
What do you think you're doing? It's hot. A, Haley, this is your question. A, in here, or B, in here, let's take off all our clothes.
I think it's got to be just A.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't think Dirk Space Jammer, they, listen, you can rip off Nelly. Star Wars, but don't you dare rip off Nelly. That guy's going to come for you. He's going to rip the Band-Aid right off your face.
The last concert I went to go see was actually Nelly opening for Florida Georgia Line.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. Did he do Hunt and Her?
Yeah.
Oh, of course. I'm sure. Yeah. Like that had to have been one of the featured songs, right? Like still slaps, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, it still rocks. Great song.
Okay, well their back and forth continues. We're in space. It's freezing.
Then maybe it's just me.
Your smoldering eyes won't work on me.
Don't be so sure. You haven't seen them smolder like
A, the twin suns Castor and Pollux, or B, the twin volcanoes on the planet Venus. Mike, oh. This question is for you.
So the question is, are they going to go super fictional with their narrative? Or are they going to get super lazy and reference a planet that already exists? Oh, this is tough. I want to feel like, see, I would feel like initially, like any other season would probably be B, because they're like, oh, this is just like a throwaway punishment. Let's throw in some stuff. Like Haley read Hamlet a couple of seasons ago, and so they need to make up anything. But they're looking at Ian's costume. They're probably so committed to the bit at this point that they're like, no, we need to create a whole narrative. So I believe that A, the twin sons of Castor and Pollux is going to be the correct answer.
That is correct. Yes, that was some bizarre logic, Mike, but it worked out for you here. The line was, yeah, you haven't seen them smolder like the twin sons, Castor and Pollux. So sexy. All right.
So the sons have names?
Twin sons, Castor and Pollux. The sons.
Does our son have a name?
It's like sun, right? And not like.
No, yeah. Not like like child sun. No, like sun, like in the sky sun.
Does our son have a name?
I'm sure it does. I'm sure it's not. It can't just be called like the sun. I'm sure scientists have named it. You know what I mean?
Now I have to look this up because I'm really intrigued by this.
Does this again add to your bizarre list of ribbed blanket searches? This one is probably a little bit more PC though.
No, it says the sun does not have a proper scientific. Oh yeah, it does have a proper scientific name. Sol.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not like, it's no Castor. Yeah, like the drink.
Yes, exactly like the drink. Yeah, I don't know, maybe that just feels like how galaxy centric we are, that we just call it like the sun, not even thinking about the fact that there are many suns out there in the world.
It's our sun, the sun. Okay, well, this interaction continues. Nope, still not impressed. I'm completely focused on our mission, you suave old pirate.
Pirate?
I don't, dude.
Old? How old is Dirk Space Jammer supposed
suave.
To be? Now I'm just imagining this like pervy old man.
That's much weirder. Okay.
Look into my eyes just one more time.
All right, now he's just completely... All right, now I'm imagining Captain Barbossa from the Pirates series as Dirk Space Jammer.
Okay, so then stage directions. They stare at each other. Dirk has the most smoldering eyes in the history of the universe. But before the queen gives in, Dirk's daft robot, Hugo 825, enters. The entrance breaks the moment. Am I interrupting? Yes. No. Oh my God, Captain Space Jammer, has anyone told you that your eyes are simply A, on fire, or B, smoldering?
Ooh, I think based on the last one where you talked about smoldering eyes, I'm going to have to go with smoldering.
That is correct. Yes. Smoldering eyes indeed.
My God, cock block robot here.
I know, right?
And then the robot, like, kind of flirting with Dirk Space Jammer too.
I think so. I'm not entirely sure their relationship, the history of their relationship. I assume this is like a Luke Skywalker droid type situation, R2-D2, C-3PO and all that jazz.
I don't necessarily know. 285.
Hugo 825.
Hugo 825. All right.
I don't know if that means anything.
Let's look into the numerology here for a second while we go through this.
Okay. Well, so that actually concludes scene 25.
Oh, so it just ends with the robot wanting to bang Dirk Space Jammer?
That's it. That's all we got. That's all she got. All they wrote. All right. So then we can move on to the next scene, scene 36, unless, Mike, you have some insight on it. Hugo 825.
No, I'm trying to look into the number 825. Still TBD, but we'll have to figure it out. I don't know. I'm just still hung up on the fact that the robot might want to have sex with Kirk Space Jammer at the end of this scene.
Eyes are so smoldering. Okay, so scene 36. Okay, so this is the monologue that Captain Space Jammer gives to all of his, I guess, soldiers, aka the other house guests that are stuck listening to him. He frequently gives this scene in the kitchen, standing up on like the chair or the table or something. So it's very, you know, grandiose, his performance here. All right, so Dirk Space Jammer begins.
Soldiers of the Grand Star Army of the 7th Alpha Quadrant of the Arbanilla Galaxy. I know you
It sounds like Dirk Space Jammer is like on his last peg leg. Like, it seems like he's going to keel over at any second.
Also, for those that, like, I'm like holding a cane, like, that was somehow
Yeah, why is Dirk Space Jammer like 80 years old?
He said he's a suave old pirate, right? So I guess he's suave, so he's gonna be a little bit more sexy. Okay. Let me try.
I know.
No. Okay.
I know you are scared, and you should be. Today we face the greatest challenge we have ever encountered. The battle ahead will be our hardest yet. More challenging than the cyborgs we fought on.
A, the crest of Uranus. Or B, the rings of Saturn. Mike, this is for you.
The crest of Uranus sounds like the follow-up scene where Dirk Space Jammer has sex with the robot. So I don't know. So they fought battles. Would they rather fight him in Uranus or on Saturn? I feel like the rings of Saturn, like that's an obvious one to go for, but I don't know if that's too obvious. I'm going to say the rings of Saturn.
That is correct. Yes, I did write the crest of Uranus.
I should realize that as well. But again, this thing is oddly dirty, so they could have said the rings of Uranus.
We'll get into it. We'll get into it. All right. So Dirk continues. Haley, this next one is going to be for you.
Harsher than the phantom winds of Europa, and yes, scarier than the space serpents we battled deep in Uranus. Many of us won't come back. Baron Odious has assembled a horde of the most well-trained.
A, space creatures that crawled out of Mars, or B, warriors this side of Neptune.
I like the sound of B better.
That is correct. Yes, warriors this side of Neptune.
Wait, so did they just give up writing fantasy planets and suns? They just said, oh, we're cool with Saturn and Neptune. We ran out of our creativity.
That is 100%, which is why I loved your logic of like, yeah, they're going to be more creative knowing that like we're going to get a Saturn reference, a Neptune reference, a Uranus reference later. So apparently it ran out by scene 36. All right. Well, he continues.
If today is the day I perish, then so be it. But it will not be fear who takes me down. It will be courage, because I will ride into battle upon my mighty steed known as bravery. And I ask you all to summon this courage too. Mount it like you would a space horse. Ride it like A, you mean it,
oh.
Or B, confidently.
Write it like you mean it is another like Julie Chenism that's going to come out. I don't want to predict week six eviction. Remember, write it like you mean it. I love that they use the term space horse again. They didn't even come up with a new term to describe it. They just said space horse. So I'm going to say, I'm going to say confidently. I really hope he didn't say write it like you mean it.
No, it is confidently. I think I had more fun writing the alternative version of what the script should have been. Especially just because let's take off all our clothes really should have been included here. But fine. All right, we got one more question here in this scene. So Haley, Dirk again goes on with his monologue.
And know that if you do meet the wrong end of a moon sword.
Oh, Jesus.
So creative.
You did it with honor. But today, I believe we will win. It is a complicated plan, to be sure. Queen Andromeda must thread the needle with her 4417 rocket blowing up their star station. And then my trusty bot, Hugo 825, will have only seconds to A, lower their shields, or B, subvert the main power.
Go with B.
Unfortunately, no, it was A here. Lower their shields.
I really would have used the term subvert in this script, Haley.
I believe this is literally, essentially, the plot of Star Wars, also, by the way. But fine.
I have not seen a Star Wars, so I could not tell you.
No, I mean, I think there are a few small differences, but essentially...
Sorry to spoil you, Haley, that this is essentially how Star Wars goes, including the hero having sex with the robot.
And the space horse and the moon sword.
I thought he hooked up with his sister.
Yes.
That's exactly what they saw that, and they're like, let's do something even more demented than that. God, moon sword. I'm still stuck up on that. Like, they just took a noun and they decided to add a space thing before it, to the point where they literally put space before some of these words.
Yeah. That's how you make it spacey, right?
I suppose so.
In front of sword.
Well, if they want to make it spacey, they can make it even more pervy.
That's not that type of Kevin. But I think it's like constellation crossbow, you know, comet shield. What are some other ones we can go with?
Yeah, exactly. Like, how about my nebula boots?
My meteorite slingshot. Okay. Well, he continues here. We'll close out this scene.
And then I lead our ground attack with nothing but a blaster and a moonsword to protect me. The odds may not be in our favor, but as my father used to say, screw the odds. And then all the house guests go, screw the odds. And then he goes, for the galaxy. And then all the house guests go, for the galaxy, if they're around, if he's not doing it super early in the morning. So anyway, so that concludes scene 36.
Wow, what a speech. Like, General Patton shaking in his nebula boots, and what a rousing speech that is.
I know, right?
I'm glad he also reminded them of what the plan was.
Yes. I mean, for all of us to know, which really makes me wonder what we're missing here, either before scene 25 especially, but in between scene 25 and 36, like, did him and Hugo get it off? We don't know.
So I'm intrigued. Like, do you think he's trying to put the flirt on with Queen Andromeda to, like, use her resources to help subdue Baron Odius? Or do you think he really has the hots for her and she just happens to, like, be involved with the plan?
Or, as Haley pointed out, they're siblings. So, you know. All right. Well, scene 54. So a lot happens. So we kind of have to infer what's going on. But let me perform scene 54 for you guys.
Okay. No.
And then Dirk Space Jammer falls down.
No.
And he starts crying.
My only friend. No, Hugo 825. Hugo was my only friend.
No.
And scene.
Oh, that's it. Okay, so Hugo 825 is dead. He bit the space dust.
We don't know how it happens, or at least I don't know how it happens.
I guess that somehow, plan went wrong.
Apparently, because we get the gripping conclusion here of this saga in scene 79, and we've got a couple more questions for you guys based on this scene. So this is between Dirk Spacejammer and Baron Odious. I know, the gripping conclusion. So Dirk Spacejammer.
Are they going to hook up?
We got to find out.
I think Dirk Spacejammer has screwed everyone in the galaxy.
Yeah, very Captain Kirk.
That's why he's going to screw the odds.
Who are the odds, if so, I worry.
Now the evens!
To the prime numbers!
Yeah, the okay. Adventures of Dirk Spacejammer, Space Whore!
Is this a porno series?
It very easily became one.
Oh, no! No!
Yeah.
All right. Let's get this over with. Okay, Dirk Spacejammer. Surrender, Baron. No, okay. Surrender, Baron, before I turn you into stardust. I'll give you this, Dirk Spacejammer. You have a heart.
Why is everyone elderly in this movie?
I don't know. Because it's like, whatever. Screw you, Mike. Okay. I'll give you this, Dirk Spacejammer.
Would you mind chewing my pills?
Well, you have a heart, and I look forward to cutting it out. You mean like you did to A, my father, or B, Hugo 825? Mike, ooh. This question is for you.
Well, I don't think Hugo 825 has a heart. I don't think Dirk Spacejammer would program his sex robots to have those types of viable organs. So I'm going to say, and I think, look, if we're going in a Star Wars direction, how could they not say that he killed his father only to find out that Baron Odious, at the ripe age of 160 years old, is his father. So I'm going to say my father.
Yes, that is correct. Apparently, the Baron killed Dirk Spacejammer's father. We don't quite know how, but that definitely adds to the backstory here. We don't know if, you know, the Baron is his father, but at least this is what we see so far here. All right, so the Baron continues, "Don't cry over spilled Milky Way. You're not half the man my dad was. I was after I cut him in half.
Jesus.
My father didn't deserve to die. He was the kindest man in the galaxy. I loved him so much." And then Ian cries here. "Go on then, kill me. He taught me how to ride my star bike when I was only 5 light years old."
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Star bike, yes, your
star
favorite
bike.
I couldn't even. That's it. End of creativity.
He taught me how to drive a space car.
"Go on then, finish me. He gave me a moon tiger once."
What?
"He gave me a moon tiger once. I, A, named it Pluto, or B, called it Buzz Aldrin." Haley, this is for you.
Fuck. I can't imagine that it's, like, is Buzz Aldrin, like, copywritten? Oh, God, let's go with Pluto.
That is correct. Yes, he named it Pluto.
Wait, why is Dirk Spacejammer usually the villain monologues, right? Like, I think what Baron is trying to say is, like, please stop talking and just kill me. Stop telling me your life story, Dirk Spacejammer.
So I saw Davon act this out with him, where that was Davon's attitude as well. Like, just get this over with. Stop. Okay. "Finish me. I will avenge my father. This is for my father. I'm waiting." And then he stabs Davon, or stabs the Baron. "This is for you, Dad, and for you too, Mom, and for you, Pluto." The end.
Wait, did he legitimately say, like, "You killed my father, this is for my father"?
Yes, I will avenge my father.
I really thought the Baron was going to be his father.
I know. Well, I mean, you know, that could still potentially be the case. I don't know if scene 79 is the last scene in the entire film here. I just don't understand. Hugo dies in scene 54, and then Hugo is not referenced at all during 79, which makes me wonder, what happened to Hugo? Did the Baron kill him? Was it, you know, I don't know, oil failure that happened? Like, who knows?
Base oil failure. I think that, well, clearly the plan to get into the Baron's headquarters didn't work. I don't know who screwed up the plan. Maybe it was Queen Andromeda. And so I think, you know, poor Hugo ended up falling on his moonsword and died as a result. And I'm just surprised that 20 plus scenes had to pass between, it seems like Hugo dying is like the emotional climax of the movie, but 20 scenes later is when Dirk Spacejammer finally confronts the Baron.
Yeah, 25 scenes later, we actually get this conclusion.
How long is this movie supposed to be?
Great question. I mean, each scene is not that long. So, you know, you could really like Dirk space jam them all in there and then just have a short movie. I think my favorite thing, though, is now going back and looking at all the dumb things were named. Moon Tiger, Star Bike, Moon Sword. just Space Horse, which is literally the laziest one out of all of them.
Oh, I love it. Well, actually, that's perfect, because the thing I want to talk about is kind of the Space Horse of competitions, which was the veto competition from this past week of just hold up a star paddle with a ball on it. Because I'm of two minds here. On the one hand, like, my God, is this incredibly simple. Haley's holding out her dinner plate now, like Oliver Twist.
My breakfast plate. This is hard. I hurt my shoulder yesterday, so I'm about to give up.
So that was the veto competition. A lot of people were comparing it to a Survivor competition. I'm personally really trying to digest whether I'm happy that they tried something new that wasn't like big and ridiculous and full of slime and wacky sound effects, or if this was boring to watch. Haley, what's your assessment of this space challenge?
Why not both? Why can't it be new and different, but also boring? Like, sometimes you don't always need a really exciting veto competition.
I think because of the joy that was brought by David just yelling in the hilarious fashion that he did, that's what made me okay with it ultimately. Because it was like, he wasn't even like, pretending like oh no, like I'm gonna drop it. It's like, oh, or something stupid. I don't even remember what it was.
Let's just say David would be one of the worst basketball players on earth because he is terrible at psych outs.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's not how that works, buddy. Oh my gosh.
I forgot about David going, oh, oh.
Yeah, I felt just Memphis just being like so over it too. He was just like, I am not having this. I appreciate the setups being more minimal because it gives them more time in the backyard, which I think is I appreciate, because I think more can happen when the backyard is open. That being said, was this more or less interesting than a table maze?
Ooh.
More.
More interesting. Is it because they only ran it once instead of four times?
And yes. Did not have a 4-minute timeout for each maze.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say I like the innovation, but it also reminds me of some of those more quote unquote old school challenges. Is it on the level of throw CDs into a pool or land a helicopter on a pad? No, but it's also a bit different from like the jump from one side to the other with a magnetized puzzle. You know, it was simple and it tasted like a very core facet. Unfortunately, that was not a good draw for somebody like Nicole Anthony, who just like completely crumbled due to her lack of arm strength. I also wonder, so this was one of the rare challenges to also take place at night.
Okay. Like the middle of the night?
Yeah, didn't necessarily need it. I guess they like the stars are out, so then we'll bring it up. But I feel like with the All-Stars theming, like, aren't the stars always technically out? So you don't need to do this at like 2 a.m.
It's the star competition. I think because it's so hot is actually the real reason why they're doing it so late at night. So I think that there's some logic behind it. Now, I think this would have been more interesting if it had been almost more of a balance the ball type situation versus a strength holding it up, because it seemed like those plates were pretty heavy. Whereas with some of the Survivor challenges, it's like three balls and you got to juggle your balls, which
I would love that actually. If it's like it's when they have like they're holding like the paddle that you used to get pizza out of an oven, mm-hmm. and that you have to balance, you have to get the three balls in the three grooves. I think that would be a way to sort of like make it more actionable and more quote unquote fair to those of different physiques without necessarily having them stand in one spot for a long time.
I will say, though, riding bananas is amazing. And so, like, it's a Big Brother staple. It happens. But the gif of Enzo probably beats David yelling. So ultimately, I picked banana over plate, but still.
You know what? Maybe we should do that. Should we make a power of veto rankings of all the veto competitions? Because I feel like those are the most, like, ridiculous competitions because there's more time to set them up. You don't need to crown the victor by the end of the eviction episode. So this is maybe something we should keep running.
All right, so what? We have two so far. What would you call this one?
So this one, I guess we can go by the technical names, I suppose, and maybe the fun part will be trying to remember what the hell the names allude to. Mm-hmm. So we have Going Bananas was the first veto combination. Okay. And then we have All Starry Night.
Yeah, I'm never going to remember that. All Starry Night. All Starry Night. All right, so I got them written down. So I think I personally would put Going Bananas above All Starry Night in terms of like a continuous ranking, but that's just my personal preference.
I agree. Haley, do you agree as well?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, we'll start that. You know, this along with the list of Julie Chen adages will be our running Ron Clark lists this season.
And we'll get this probably put in a novel as well of all the fantastic. It's going to be power veto competitions sandwiched by Julie Chen quotes.
Yeah, each one gets associated with whatever the Julie Chen quote was.
I love that. So then remember the golden rule is for the bananas.
So do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Relevant.
Listen, if you want to ride bananas, be prepared to have one ride you.
Yeah. And then if you have to choose between being right and being kind, choose kindness. And I don't quite know what that has to do with the All Starry Night competition.
Maybe it means like if you're trying to yell, that's not being kind. So like, therefore, you're not right or you are being right. Again, I still don't understand the logic of it.
Like she treats them like they're mutually exclusive.
Yeah. You could be right or you could be kind.
Right, but you can't be both. I still feel that inherently the right thing to do is the kind thing to do. So you would never have a situation where they would be mutually exclusive. Whatever. Yeah. This is like too much energy I'm putting into my frustration with Julie's stupid saying.
Well, I think you need to rev up for next week when I'm assuming some even more confusing smattering of words is going to fall open from her head and we're going to have to dissect it.
Like, this is why I love Big Brother so freaking much. I love this. Like, as much as I may be like confused and complaining, this is beautiful. I've had so much fun today going through all of this. Oh, man. I love Big Brother.
Well, let's move over and make some space, and not in the space way, but some space for our charity corner. Of course, every week we are plugging a different cause to dedicate your time and your money to. And Haley, as the guest of honor, you have the floor here. What charity would you like to highlight this week?
I don't know if this is a cop out, but I think with everything going on, it's important to not forget about your local charities. So if you can, donate a few dollars to your local food banks. I know a lot of them are struggling right now because they are not able to have the fundraising events that they usually do. I know my local food bank, Port Cares, is doing a 50-50 draw. I bought my tickets for that. And a lot of these food banks are doing programs for kids for back to school. A lot of them usually do a donate the backpack kind of thing. And if your place isn't doing that right now, donate money so that they can get these kids school supplies. So look up the food bank in your area and donate a few dollars if you can. Anything helps usually.
Yeah, if you go to feedingamerica.org, they actually have a link that says find your food bank where you can put in your zip code and they can give you the nearest one in the area. So from that perspective, you have no excuse. Don't make those in need have-nots for the time being. Make sure you provide them with ample supplies if you have the means to do. So again, feedingamerica.org and find and donate to your local food bank. And Haley, thank you so much for not only highlighting that cause, but for coming on and learning all about Dirk's Space Jammer, raiding some house guest outfits. It was truly a treat to have you on.
Why, thank you. It was wonderful to be here.
So if people want to catch up on all the podcasting that you're doing, what do you have currently in the hopper going on as you talk into mics?
Right now, Amy and I are still covering Bachelor Greatest Seasons of All Time on the Bachelor Wrap Up. They like to take weeks off every once in a while. I think we're in the middle of
like
2 weeks.
3 weeks off or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Things are weird. So we may or may not talk about Bachelor Australia again this week. We're not sure yet. Also, you and I, Mike, we're still keeping on the Beyond Top Chef podcast. We talked about Guy Fieri this morning, so that should be a oot and a boot. Maybe when you're listening to this, we'll see. And then you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at hstrong_, and you can check out my blog, strongtakes.ca, where you can check out the aforementioned post of ranking the Big Brother 22 cast based on how excited I was to see them again.
For any Bachelor or Bachelorette friends who have not tuned into the international coverage, do you recommend The Bachelor Australia with Lachie Gilbert from Australian Survivor?
Yeah, I've only watched the first two episodes so far, but it was a lot of fun.
All right, Liana, what have you got going on?
Yeah, so I'm a huge Lachie fan. So I like him. As soon as I saw that you guys had done some coverage of it, I was like, oh, I have to listen to this. It was so fun with you guys and Shannon going through everything. I really, really enjoyed that.
Thanks. He's also really, really good looking. So if you just like looking at nice, attractive men, like
that's why they call him Lucky.
Shannon told you guys about this, but like the one challenge where he lost his pants and then you could just see his butt. I have GIFs of that saved on my computer for no reason.
She sent us the clip.
Yeah, it's lovely. Truly lovely. All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Liana RHAP. I'm podcasting about Big Brother on the morning update. So just did the Saturday morning update with Taryn. Mike and I are also doing the Survivor B&B for our Survivor rewatch. We are wrapping things up this week, doing the finale of Borneo. Mike, are you excited?
I am. You and I were talking offline. It's the most watched Survivor episode of all time, and it's one of my personal favorites. There's just so much that goes on there, and we're going to have a great time. You know what? There's been a lot of discussion in the Big Brother house about the Amazing Race 31, and we're going to talk with one of its contestants, Corey Cool of Tyler and Corey, is going to come on and talk the Survivor Borneo finale with us. Technically a member of the RHAP class of 2020 as well, so we're going to have a lot of fun stuff with that.
Yeah, maybe he can give us some insight on what's going on here with all the big
I mean,
drama.
I know he's been vehemently saying, like, why are people misrepresenting all these facts about the Amazing Race 31?
Yeah, so I can't wait to get into that. And then also talking about Canada's Drag Race, which we're getting close to the end here. It's been a blast to talk with a lot of the members of the class of 2020 about this season because it's been so enjoyable. And we're doing video podcasts for that as well. So if you want to check out all of the runways and all the looks as we go through them, check out the YouTube page for Rob Has a Podcast.
Who has worse judgments in a reality show, Kevin or Jeffrey Boyer Chapman?
Oh man, Kevin is terrible, but so is Jeffrey Boyer Chapman. So that is a tough one. That is a race. I think no one wins in this situation.
Yeah, and you would think of the two, Kevin would be the more one to more likely wear like jizzed eye makeup. But it seems like no, JBC has that on lock.
Oh my god, I literally thought, I was like, you just got jizzed on by a Smurf. What is this? Like, this is terrible. Whatever.
And you can follow me at a Mike Bloom type. You can check out the exit press I do every week on parade.com for Big Brother. As I mentioned, just got off talking with Nicole Anthony. She really opened up a lot about, you know, her own anxieties and mistakes that she made in the game. Also, some very interesting comments when I did a word association with her about her fellow house guests. So definitely check that out. Of course, tough as nails, we are also rounding the bend on with the anti-penultimate episode, third from last episode with Phil Kogan. Haley mentioned Beyond Top Chef. On post-show recaps this week, Josh Wiggler is out due to personal matters. So I got to swing in and take his spot on a couple of really fun podcasts. First on the Lovecraft Country recap with Kevin Mahadeo and LaTanya Starks. And I got to sub in as well on Everything is Super, talking the fantastic movie Spider-Man Homecoming with Kevin Mahadeo. So be sure to check all that out as well. And if you have any other games that you want to send us, be sure to do so. We're going to keep doing this each and every week here on the B&B. So make sure you send any ideas you have to us, either hashtag RHAPBNB or email us, rhapbnb@gmail.com. And special thanks to all of you who sent me suggestions of outfits that we could rate throughout the season. There were many, many to choose from, and who knows, maybe there'll be many more as the season winnows down. Next week, we are bringing in another veteran to RHAP, but a first-time guest on the BNB. You know him from his coverage of The Challenge, and he just was on with Liana, but not part of her team for the game night on Robin and Kim Anita podcast. Brian Cohen is going to be joining us. Those of you might not know, Brian is a Big Brother fan, and so I'm excited to get his thoughts about everything. There's going to be a lot to get into, I'm sure. It's not going to be a fun week necessarily, but I'm sure we're going to find stuff to talk about. We don't have to go too far out into space to find stuff to talk about with this season. And that includes your game ideas as well. We are accepting of anything and everything. That's going to do it for this week's podcast. Again, thank you so much, Haley. Go to feedingamerica.org. Make sure you look up your local food bank and you know, try to help people out in this time of need if you have the means to do so. Special thanks to Scott Pierre for editing everything behind the scenes, and Wolf from America for his fantastic theme song. We'll be back next week covering week 3 with Brian Cohen. But for now, we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. And I pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the RHAPBNB. Mike and Liana, yeah, they're playing some games. Pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.